This is CliffCentral.com.
We stood in the middle of the departure terminal at O.R. Tambo International, one of the busiest airports in the Southern Hemisphere. A few steps away was the check-in counter of her brand new airline, Blue Fly Crane. A few more steps away were the counters of South Africa's national carrier, SAA, or South African Airways. Siza Imzamela, the CEO of Blue Fly Crane and the first female to start an airline in Africa, was once the CEO of SAA. I was there to interview her from my CNBC Africa show, Profiling Women Leaders. Siza's smile lit up the airport. There was buzz all around. She said she wanted to bring romance back to flying. You see, Siza is the first female on the board of the International Air Transport Association. Siza joined SAA in January 1996 as a research analyst. She became head of global sales and Voyager program and chief executive officer from the 1st of April 2010 until the 8th October 2012. Due to political influence, she walked out as CEO and her entire board walked out as well. In her resignation letter, she said, "As many of you know, there has not always been a uniform understanding and appreciation of this mandate from stakeholders, which bred a myriad of challenges. As if the operating environment was not daunting enough without this unnecessary due course and misinformation," end quote. The discourse she speaks of is the subject of today's show. When you have one of the most brilliant minds in global aviation and she becomes a statistic due to political discourse or interference, the question becomes, how do you grow sustained top talent in an atmosphere of intense political influence? Welcome back to the next episode of the Brain and Brand Show. I am your host, Timothy Maurice, and this is the show where we explore the link between brain and brand behavior, how people impact brands, and how brands impact the well-being and psyche of people. Today, I'm excited to welcome Harvard-educated CEO of Institute of People Management, Dr. Jerry Gooley. Dr. Gooley, welcome to the Brain and Brand Show.
Thank you very much, Tim.
I just want to make it clear. Are you interim CEO or are you full CEO
now? I am now full CEO as with effect from November.
From November, the congratulations.
The board bestowed this honor on me.
Awesome, congratulations. Yes. Beyond Harvard, you also studied education in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
You spent many good years in the U.S. before the Trump era, during the good times.
Yes, sir.
You were there, was it the Clinton years?
Clinton years, yes.
Clinton Bush years. As complex as those years were,
yes,
those were fun times, weren't they?
They were fun times, true.
Much has changed globally since those years. Growing and managing talent has become extremely complex. It always was, but even more now. What is IPM doing, this Institute of People Management? It's such a phenomenal history of developing people. What is it doing now to address this complexity?
Yeah, we certainly are right. We realize that the need for talent is always going to grow exponentially. Despite the difficulties that economies might have, organizations must adapt. And that adaptation, successful adaptation, it requires people. People with talent, people with skills, people who need to ride the next wave of change. So we are involved in that area as IPM. We just had a very successful convention where our speakers looked at different ideas that HR professionals, line managers, organizations need in order to navigate their future in this volatile world. Yes, so we are in the business of upskilling talent. Yeah,
absolutely. And you guys have been doing a great job of this for many, many years. Yes. You know, your former CEO, I'm very fond of, part of the old school culture.
Yes.
Your background, when you look specifically at where you come from, you have an executive coaching background. You've coached some of the top leaders.
Yes.
Just give me a quick trait.
Yeah.
A quick trait. What are some of the things you've noticed that you've been able to observe that top leaders have to help them excel?
Yeah. The key trait is humility. Top leaders are not afraid to say that I don't know. That's why they surround themselves with other people who may be even cleverer than they are. And they use that talent to augment where they lack. So that's one, humility, accepting that they don't know it all. And people who don't take themselves seriously. I mean, the people that I work with are people who understand, who are all employees, even if they are top dogs of the organization, but they understand we are here to serve all stakeholders, not just the shareholders. So humility, accepting the fact that they don't know it all, and willing to learn. I found that those leaders excel.
It's interesting because I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yes.
You don't often find Harvard graduates who are very humble. Harvard graduates often, not all, but often will wear the Harvard badge quite boldly. Mm. So I'm going to put you on the spot. What is something that you don't know?
I'm not very strong on financial management. I will admit that. Therefore, I get people who know that. Not like I'm totally blank, but when it comes to people talk about derivatives and all those things, I don't know that. Yes. So when it comes to investing, I seek help.
And one of your strengths, though, the thing that you know?
Yeah.
There are very few people who know this thing.
Yes.
Like you.
Yes. You know what I find is that all sorts of people find me very approachable, but also very honest in interacting with them and giving them feedback. And I think the coaching has helped me to be able to give feedback, sometimes hard feedback. I pride myself in accepting feedback, even coming to me. My team at IPM, for instance, knows this. Because one of the things that I believe in is that if you are at work, your ego shouldn't be it. It's about delivering. A manager is there to enable. So that's one thing that I know about myself, that I'm very strong at enabling others to shine, to be their best.
That's critical, especially when gender, race, class, these are massive challenges in the workplace. I see it all over. You find, for example, in my work as a thought leader, I'll go to a conference and you'll find that black people struggle to speak to white audiences, and white speakers struggle, conversely. And this is a real challenge. I mean, South Africa, Africa, the entire world is grappling with these issues.
Yeah.
You guys have a number of platforms. You just came off a phenomenal conference.
Yes.
You seek to address some of these things. What are some of the tools? What are some of the resources that IPM offers to be able to address these?
You are spot on there. We at this conference, just to mention, we had a phenomenal speaker who is a guru on diversity and inclusion, which is an issue. And I think will be an issue in our country for many years to come, despite the human rights culture that we're trying to create. But the issues of diversity, because it's not just being black, white. It's basically inclusion, and diversity and inclusion requires that you look, even if you are black, forget the complexity of black and white, just black people amongst themselves appreciating one another. So that's going to be an issue. So in terms of tools, we've great speakers, we've written books who present these things and say this is available. From an IPM point of view, one of the things that we do, we commission some of our fellows. These are people who have walked the HR route or management route for many, many decades and who know some of the issues. So we commission those people to write articles in our People Dynamics magazine so that can be made available to members.
And if people want to go and check this out while they're listening, they can go to www.ipm.
.co.za.
IPM, very simple. IPM.co.za.
Yeah, they will find it there.
So you're commissioning reports, you're commissioning healthy insights, deep research, you're publishing this insight, and you're distributing it to who?
We distribute mainly to the members, but on our website, people can access that. But we obviously, the priority is to our members.
So your members are a group of people from across the region, political, private sector, all across. Who do you hope your members are?
Well, we target all HR professionals and line managers because we're about people management. It's one of the things that we're moving into, really, to say that your line manager In fact, I always say your line manager is your first HR person, because that's the person who can break or make the talent. And they need to understand the rules and how to, they can themselves encourage talent to grow and not feel threatened by talent. So our primary focus up to now, of course, has been the HR fraternity, but we're about people management, so we're expanding the scope.
Let's go through an exercise. I'm going to put your coaching hat on for me.
Okay.
It's 2011. Cesar Imzamela phones you.
Yeah. Yeah.
She goes, "It's very complex in this thing.
Yes.
I've been left with this extraordinary debt challenge, and there's all sorts of, you know, wrangling and political influence from our stakeholders. How do I grow myself as a talent? How do I navigate this space? How do I inspire confidence amongst my stakeholders? How do I get my employees to see that I'm doing a good job?" You know, I enjoy spending time with leaders like Cesar in this moment, but let's tap into your Harvard, your Pittsburgh education.
Yes.
Share a little bit.
Yeah.
Just imagine I'm Cesar.
Yes.
Right? I don't have the smile of Cesar. I'm not as beautiful as Cesar, but just work with me.
Yes.
Dr. Gulley, please help me through this this challenge. You know, we just had the World Cup, and people are expecting a lot from SAA. There's a lot of challenges we're going through. Yeah. Give me two things that I can do to get through this stuff.
The first thing is, Cesar, pretend you're Cesar, would be, what's your dream of SAA? What vision do you have? What's your dream?
I want us to borrowing from the government. I want us to be profitable.
Okay. What has stopped you up to now? You have been with SAA for some time.
Yes.
If you look back, what is it that has stopped you from being profitable?
Yeah, I mean, some of it is, if I have to be honest, is that, you know, transformation is a big challenge. You know, there's a lot of upside, and we have to grapple with this. But, you know, from the opposite side, you know, there are times when there aren't suppliers that of color, and we, you know, so what ends up happening, as you know, we got over 90% of our suppliers are white, and that creates also in terms of internal friction and frustration, and our stakeholders putting all kinds of pressure on us.
Yeah.
So, you know, really keeping people calm, keeping people focused on the clear objective of getting their airline going, but also ensuring that, you know, people feel like we're on top of this transformation game.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my challenges I have to balance.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure this is not the first challenge we have had. If I just to give you some insights, one of the key things is for your stakeholders, and stakeholders include your suppliers, your employees, your management, your board, everybody that is involved in the life of SAA. Have you taken the time to include those stakeholders, maybe even collectively, all of them, to say, here is my vision. Here is what I would like to achieve. How can we both achieve this? Because people must have the interests of your organization at heart, all your stakeholders, and you need to engage them. Sometimes see it from their point of view. What can they contribute? For instance, on the issue of suppliers not transforming, my experience is that if you engage them, they will come through.
Mm. Let me just make some notes here. This is good stuff. You learned this at Harvard?
No. But Harvard gave me the fact that you've got to think systematically. And you must take a systems view when you look at challenges.
Got it. Thank you so much. I'm sure I'm going to send this podcast to Cesar. I'm sure she may use this in her new airline venture, Blue Fly Crane.
Yes.
By the way, Cesar, if you're listening, I'm really, really proud of you. And I really respect you at the very highest level for your work and contribution to the airline industry. Let's flip this a bit. If someone is listening who runs a municipality or any sort of, you know, political organization, and they are grappling with this issue, affirmative action, all of this stuff, they're grappling with this. Or anybody, let's say you're a white company and you really are sincere about getting in top talent. What are some of the things you can do to create a culture that's welcoming of this challenge instead of it being a grudge purchase? How do you welcome this with open arms and get everybody on board to see that this is an opportunity to help us grow?
Yes, very good question. It's education, making people aware of what we're trying to do. I have found in the transformation space that we fear the unknown. When management comes out and says, this is our commitment, this is why we're committed to it, it makes business sense. My observation is that if you are doing transformation for just simply for compliance, it's not good enough because you are not going to put your heart in it. If you look beyond yourself as an organization to say you want to make a contribution to South Africa Inc., it changes the ball game because you're not going to look at your time in the organization. You are looking to the future of the country. So it's painting that vision and championing it. You have to create a critical mass in your organization because, let's face it, not everybody's going to embrace change. Yeah. So you start with a critical mass, you get a few people to buy into this, and you build on. You show good examples. That's how it works. I worked for an organization where I was told that white manager, no person wants to work with them. And I was brought into this organization as a transformation person. My role was to try and just say, here's the strategy of the company is to transform. You play as a manager a critical role because you are responsible for a business unit. You hire talent, you make the business profitable. If you don't have the talent that is happy in your business unit, you're never going to be profitable and you affect the entire organization. How can we work together to achieve the goals? Because I just don't think that whether we are a white manager, black manager, male, female, that you want to fail, you want to succeed. Absolutely. So transformation must help you to do that.
Wow. And, you know, one of the interesting things I find is that as we move forward, there are opportunities that we overlook.
Yeah.
Here's an example. I did a show recently looking at what's happening on social media. Do we physically proactively seek diversity? Do we seek to understand each other? And I did a study and I was able to see, for example, on Instagram, one of the president's wives, you know, you would think, you know, she's one of the leading ones. She lost a lot of weight. I can't remember her name, but she's quite a vocal and outgoing, quite popular on Instagram. And I went to see how many white people she followed. Do you know that she doesn't follow even one white South African? She follows one Irishman.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what shocked me about that is I thought to myself, in the workplace, when we start dealing with people management, how do you manage and engage people if you don't understand them? If you're not curious about them?
Yeah.
If you don't know why someone is celebrating Chinese New Year, if you don't understand why someone, you know, worships their ancestors, if you don't appreciate that ecological process and how it fits into their culture, how do you? So let me put you on the, you're on social media.
Yes, right? I am. Yes, I am.
How many people outside of black people do you follow?
Actually, quite a lot. I don't have the number, but if you go to my Facebook page, you'll find a lot of people. If you go into my LinkedIn, you'll find lots of people. So it's diverse. Yes.
Good. Yeah. Do you think it's important to be curious about other people, other races?
Before I answer that question, what I found interesting is invitations from across the board. My following, for instance, is across the board. It's the Rainbow Nation, as it were, as per Tutu and Mandela. That's what it is. People inviting me, asking me, asking that we connect. And I enjoy that. It's critical, Tim. You see, I think we should see life. It's not just about ourselves. And we should also accept that it is short. And therefore, make a contribution across the board if you can. I have mentored all sorts of people, coached all sorts of people, because that's what it's about. It's not about me. It's about what contribution can I make to the next person. We talk about Ubuntu in South Africa. In fact, we have a vision of that across the continent. It's not just words. It's something that you have to practice. And if you understand, that's not about you. It's about your contribution to the world. So that's my approach. That's why I have a rainbow following. And I follow other people also.
It's 2020 now.
Yes.
You know, time is flowing. I remember, you know, a few years ago, everybody, 2020 goals. Everybody had 2020 goals. There's an organization called Leadership 2020.
Yeah.
It seemed very far away, but it's quite close.
Yes.
It's December 2020. You're sitting at your desk at IPM. You're reviewing the year.
Mm-hmm.
What are you celebrating?
2020, first and foremost, celebrate, want to celebrate, will be celebrating growth in our membership, covering not just HR persons, as I've said, but also your line managers being proud members of the IPM. We'll celebrate young people having joined, because that's one of the focus areas. This continent is going to be, we know, half the population, even by then, by now in 2020, as we celebrate, we know that the future of the continent is in the hands of young people. And they must be, as the French say, implicated in our strategies. They must be part of it. So that's what we'll be celebrating. In our board, we have young people that have joined, both male and female, and possibly across the color line, because that's what we want to see. That's what we'll be celebrating. An organization that is known to be customer-centric also, or member-centric in our case.
So young people will be sitting at coffee shop downloading the IPM app. They'll be getting notifications across from various sort of fellows, and they'll be getting content that's relevant to them.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. Just quickly before we wrap this up, HR and talent, human resources and talent, what is the big difference? And what do you see? How do you see organizations tailoring talent divisions from HR divisions and segregating them or separating them, or will they be working together? What do you see as the future of this?
Okay, to put it in a nutshell, HR is about making sure that you have systems that take care of your people management in an organization. Talent, on the other hand, I look at talent as scouting for people that can be grown. HR is about due diligence. Talent management is about acquiring that talent, bringing it in the organization, growing it, and making sure that it is properly deployed within the organization. Particularly as we move into a digital era where the talent that you'll use in your organization may not necessarily be your talent. So you need to know, once you have people, how are you going to utilize them for the benefit of your organization and for growing their own futures? Because we know people will increasingly be working for organizations that they feel valued and they feel they can do things that they love. And they be flitting. I mean, we are told that the millennials are not going to stay like we have done in organizations, or our forefathers have done. They will be staying a shorter and shorter period. So the question is, HR must make sure that we provide within the organization things that can attract and keep them there. The talent people must make sure that these new employees can acquire the skills that they need to better themselves while benefiting the organization also. That's where I see the synergy between the two.
Of course, this show is about the brain and brand.
Yeah.
You know, developing talent and human resources ultimately involves the brain.
Mm-hmm.
But the brand is implicated as well. You can't have a thriving brand without thriving people and systems internally.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any examples of brands out there that you've worked with, that you are familiar with, that are doing extremely well? But what most people don't know is that it's because they've got the HR and talent solid.
Yeah.
The people are strong. Mm-hmm. Any examples?
Mm-hmm. They are hard to find, but they are there. They are there. I mean, the couple of companies where I've worked, I know that I cannot say 100%. You find pockets of excellence in organizations. I mean, so there are organizations out there, there are brands out there where you know people are buzzing, get excited, because that part of the organization is really humming. That manager or leader that they work under is a great leader. So you find pockets. I'm not in a position, I mean, we have, one of the organizations is in the FMCG sector, based in Durban. And they do amazing, amazing things. And they've won this, you know, Employer of Choice awards, sometimes 3 years in a row. So you can see that there's something happening there.
It's interesting for me because I look at brands like Discovery and the work that they're doing, the focus on leadership internally.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a link between the strength of their people and the strength of their brand. And I would encourage anyone listening to really look at having a conversation between your brand managers, your marketing team, and your talent team, and really seeing, if I'm going to drive out this brand vision, what type of people, what type of systems do we need to reinforce this? Dr. Gulley, thank you for joining us on the Brain and Brand Show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Tim.
We wish you the best over the holidays. And for those of you who would like to see my interview with Cesar Mzamela, go to CNBC Africa's website and check out my show there. You know, I asked her, how does it feel to launch an airline next to the airline you walked out of? Her smile said it all. Join us next week as we continue to explore the link between human and brand behavior. Continue following us, sharing our link with your friends and family. Make sure that as you spread this link, you let them know what they can expect so they'll look forward to sharing it more themselves. We'll be back next week.
This is CliffCentral.com.